stories carry with them great power.
They can transport us into the light and into the dark.
And into a place in between, a land of shadows.
It is in this land where the macabre and the strange reign.
With tales of terror,
tales of hope,
tales of the whimsical,
and the weird.
These are stories told in the shadows.
And we are the Shadow Storytellers.
Do you believe in signs? Are the random oddities of life just that, or do they sometimes hold deeper significance? If so, how can we ever be sure we're reading them correctly? And what happens when our readings conflict? Can we talk it out logically? Or agree to disagree? Or are there some interpretations that simply cannot be reconciled? Try to keep a level head as you proceed through the story we call Curse Mark.
I first learned about curse marks when I was 10 years old. It's pretty mind-boggling in retrospect that I could have spent 10 years in the world, never knowing about the thing everyone else seemed to think about all the time. But then again, how would I have found out?
Nobody ever got curse marks on TV, or in movies or children's books. They didn't teach curse marks and how to recognize them in school, at least not officially, not then. And I can't remember my parents ever saying a word on the subject. So, I was first introduced to the concept when a kid joined my class with a bright purple curse mark on his cheek, in the shape of a 7-pointed star. The long, delicate points stretched into his hairline, across one of his eyes, and into the eyebrow. I can't tell you much about him. I do remember that his name was Aaron, and that he introduced himself with the brightest, friendliest, most hopeful wave I'd ever seen out of a new kid shoved in front of a room full of strangers. I remember expecting my teacher to offer him a high five. Teachers weren't supposed to be put off by embarrassing things like braces or crutches or skin conditions. And she was always disappointed in the rest of us for not showing enough enthusiasm, so Aaron seemed like he was going to be an instant favorite. She looked like she was trying to swallow a lemon wedge whole when she sent him to his seat. I looked around. About half of the class looked the way I felt. Curious, confused, maybe a little grossed out by the mark itself. We were only 10, after all. The other half looked as if someone had wheeled a tiger in a flimsy dog carrier into the room. My best friend, Amber, was in the second category. Amber had 4 older siblings and always knew things I didn't, so, naturally, I asked her to catch me up over lunch that day. "It means he's bad," she explained between tater tots, with her usual worldly assuredness. "Really? He seemed so nice," I said, careful not to make it sound like I was arguing. She could always tell me nothing at all. "He might be, but it doesn't matter," Amber said. "Everyone with a curse mark goes crazy on their 18th birthday and, like, tries to kill people and do stuff to them." I felt my mouth drop open and covered it with both hands before Amber could tease me by popping in a few tater tots. "For sure?" I asked through my fingers. Amber nodded. "What kind of stuff?" I asked. "The worst," Amber leaned close to whisper. "A curse-marked grown-up tried to drill a hole in my cousin's head one time." Speechless, I leaned sideways to look at Aaron's back across the cafeteria. 18th birthday?" I asked. "So until then, he's just normal?" "If you call that normal," said Amber. "Couldn't you feel how off he was? Nobody's that happy for their first day of school." "But he's safe to be around," I asked. "Maybe, I guess," Amber shrugged. "But you can't be too careful. And anyway, you can't get attached." I nodded, conceding to her responsible, big-picture wisdom. Still, 18th birthdays felt a very long way off to me. It took me a solid month to work up the nerve. A month of watching Aaron from across rooms, always with a huge bubble of lonely, empty space around him, doing such a good job of ignoring the unending stares, and avoiding most of the booby traps and other pranks that just had to be tested on someone. I caught him alone after school, waiting to be picked up a good 30 feet away from where most of the other kids were crowded together. I squared my shoulders and walked over to him. "Hi, Aaron." I'm not sure what I was expecting for my bravery. Maybe one of those bright, friendly waves he'd offered the whole class on that first day, all to myself. Aaron gripped his backpack tighter when he saw me approaching. "What do you want?" I wanted to tell him that he didn't have to spend the next 7.5 years alone, but that suddenly seemed like an awfully big thing to promise. "I just wanted to say hi," I said. "Hi," said Aaron. We both watched the road for a few moments. "You're Amber's friend," said Aaron. More people knew me as Amber's friend than by my name. "It's Brittany, for what it's worth." "Yeah," I said. "Amber doesn't like me," said Aaron. He said it like a statement, but it sure felt like an accusation. "So?" I asked. Aaron kept his star-marked face turned away from me and didn't say anything. Obviously, I couldn't have two friends in the same place who hated each other. I'd tried before, and it never worked. Amber had just barely forgiven me for the last time. I don't know why I thought it might be different with Aaron. Like maybe I'd get a pass for having a friend who didn't like him just because nobody liked him. The next 7.5 years stretched out in front of me. I imagined spending them all right here, in this lonely bubble, in this one protracted, awkward silence. When Amber spotted me and waved impatiently, pointing to our mom's cars in the line, I couldn't run to her fast enough. "What were you doing?" she asked. "I swear, if you catch it from him, I will stab you before you stab me. Friendship only gets you so far." I think she was joking. If she really believed those pointy skin blotches were contagious, she never would have come near me again. But the joke stayed with me for a long time afterward, because that was the night when I found my own curse mark. I just happened to glance in the mirror before getting in the shower, and there it was, on my left hip. It wasn't quite as clearly defined as Aaron's, but it was there, with the same 7 points, the same purplish tint. Exactly how long it had been there, I can't say. It could have appeared instantaneously, or it could have crept in unnoticed over the course of months. I wasn't exactly meticulous about checking myself over while bathing in those days. The only thing I was 99% sure of was that there had been a time when it wasn't there, or at least wasn't so visible. My heart just about stopped when I saw it. It felt so much like a nightmare that I stood there pinching myself like people did on TV until I cried. I had never cried without wanting to be heard before. That burning feeling in my throat and eyes always went together with hoping for my mom or dad to hug me and promise to help me figure everything out. But not this time. Even though my parents had never failed me, even though I could barely breathe and could not have thought clearly enough to remember my 2x table, I recognized the privacy I had lucked into as the priceless gift it was. I was not going to return it lightly. I locked the bathroom door and screamed into a towel as softly as I could, under the sound of the running shower. After the third scream, I regained enough control to recognize that I couldn't just stay in this bathroom forever. I had to do something. I pulled open the drawer and dug out a pair of scissors that were always kept extra sharp for haircuts. Amber had never really explained whether the curse marks were just a warning of the curse to come, or the cause of it. Like a weed or a cancer, it made sense to me that if I could dig the thing out fast enough, maybe the rest of me would still be okay. I stuffed the corner of the towel into my mouth, stood on my tiptoes in front of the mirror to see the hole mark over the edge of the sink, and dug in the scissor blade just above it. It hurt more than I expected and set me crying all over again. I thought I'd had bad cuts and scrapes by accident before, but trying to create one myself was something different. Between the tears and the awkward angle I was standing at, I couldn't quite see what I was doing as I pushed the blade downward into the mark itself. I screamed again and put the scissors down in the sink. "Just taking a break," I told myself, pacing myself for the home stretch. It felt as if I must have sliced off at least a third of the skin on my hip, but when I could clear my eyes again and force myself to touch the wound, I found that I'd only gotten a couple millimeters into the star's top point. Worse, when I peeled down that edge of skin, I could still see the discoloration of the star point on the fatty tissue beneath. The deep purple hue was distinct enough from the color of blood to be unmistakable. I slid down to sit on the floor and catch my breath, exhausted and full of an unfamiliar numbness. That was it, then. The curse mark was no skin-deep imperfection that I could shed. It was part of me. All the way through. I pulled myself up by the sink, just long enough to open the medicine cabinet and grab the disinfectant and the emergency pressure bandages that no one would notice missing for years. Without stitches, I knew the cut would scar, but so what? What did a scar matter next to a curse mark? As I worked, I shuffled through every hope and ambition I'd ever had for when I grew up. Going to a fancy college, becoming a famous robotics engineer, or maybe the first woman president. Getting married and having two kids in a cute little house with a dog. One by one, I hugged them with my heart, and I let them go. My life was not going to be what I'd expected. That was just the way it was. But it wasn't quite over yet, either. The gift of privacy I'd been granted went beyond the empty room where I'd made my unhappy discovery. Unlike poor Aaron, nobody needed to know about my curse mark. Not until it really became a problem. I had 7.5 years left, and after all, that was still a pretty long time. Word spread quickly through my grade about the existence and meaning of the curse marks, with Amber and the other more informed students whispering warnings to their closest friends, who whispered them onward to anyone whose ignorance they pitied enough. A black market exploded into existence, full of homemade charms and remedies guaranteed to prevent curse marks from manifesting, or to make you invisible to a rampaging, activated curse mark. Aaron remained the key example of a curse-marked person who no one wanted to be, but to my discomfort, the nervous whispers weren't all about him. It wasn't much of a leap to realize that if one person had a curse mark on his face, others might have them in less obvious places. Along with the preventative talismans, there were soon columns, books, libraries worth of advice circulating on how to spot a curse mark without actually having to spot a curse mark. I devoured that advice. Every word. I followed every single rule on how not to be spotted, no matter how little sense they made. I never showed too much enthusiasm for anything, of course. I spent 2 weeks teaching myself to whistle, because not being able to was supposed to be a sure sign, but I never whistled anything specific or listened to any music in public. Officially, it was only liking certain types of music that meant you were curse-marked, but no one could agree on exactly what types, so it was safest not to like anything. I made sure my grades were never too good, especially in science, and I complained loudly enough for someone to hear me at least once during every art class. Regardless of the weather or where I was going, I never wore turtlenecks, scarves, socks, hats, sunscreen, off-brand shoes, or more than 2 colors at a time. I begged my parents to sign me up for gymnastics so that I could spend my gym time in a leotard, and then, when I was older, a cheerleader's uniform, proving how much skin I had where the mark wasn't. The most important thing of all was to never question the rules. That was like responding to the question, "Who farted?" with, "Who cares?" Instant guilty verdict. I successfully sweated and calculated and performed my way through one day after another, and my classmates, who by then were suspicious of everyone, never suspected me. When I was 15, my communications teacher went rogue. His name was Mr. Wheeler, and he was probably my favorite. He seemed sincere whenever he reminded us that his door was always open if we needed an adult to talk to. Not that I could ever take him up on it, and his classes were usually pretty interesting, not that I could ever say so. On this day, he announced that we would be applying our new communication skills in a real-life way to tackle some timely issues from the world around us. Namely, he said, we were going to have a civilized discussion about the curse mark controversy. He looked quite pleased with himself as he shushed the answering chorus of gasps, boos, and gagging sounds. "I told my colleagues you were all mature enough to handle some tough adult subject matter," he said, rubbing his left hand and the hook he had in place of his right one together.
You're not going to make me a liar, are you?
Amber sat up straighter next to me, ready to show her maturity. I slumped my head down onto my arms, letting how much I suddenly didn't want to be here fuel my usual performance of not wanting to be here.
What's there to discuss? A boy asked from behind me.
Thank you for asking, said Mr. Wheeler.
This is actually an ancient conversation that we're all joining in progress. But let's start with the present, with what's most relevant to you kids. As some of you might know, a new law was proposed last week that would allow public schools, like this one, to separate students with curse marks into an independent study program. What do you think? If the vote were to take place in this classroom today, which way would you go on it? Aaron had been gone for a couple of years at that point, so no one had to decide whether to glance at him before sharing their thoughts. I wondered about him sometimes, where he was, and whether that bubble was still following him.
I'd say yes, of course, Amber said with bright, perfect diction. I don't know why they were ever in general classes in the first place. It's so dangerous. Independent study sounds like a perfect solution.
They have the same right to be here as any of us, said a girl in the front row who just transferred in that year. She was pretty, confident, and well-liked enough already that it was possible that people would be willing to forget she'd said that, but I didn't love her odds.
Curse-marked kids aren't dangerous, she went on. There's no reason they shouldn't get to participate in all the things you don't get in independent study, like school dances or plays or sports.
Someone's due for a skin check, said the boy behind her, jokingly tugging up on the back hem of her shirt.
Hands to yourself, Mr. Wheeler scolded. We learned that in kindergarten, remember?
The boy raised his hands innocently in the air.
Sure, they're not dangerous at first, Amber countered front row girl. If you don't count the danger of feeling completely and utterly betrayed after you spend a whole bunch of time making what you think might be a lifelong friend, only to find out that they're curse-marked.
This sparked a round of nods, both vehement and grudging.
Brittany, are you feeling all right? Mr. Wheeler asked me in the same voice he'd used for hands to yourself, boy.
Fine, I said automatically, lifting my head off the desk and pointing it straight ahead.
Serious question? Asked a different girl. How would they even know who all the curse-marked kids are?
Would there be skin checks? Like, getting naked in front of an admissions officer?
Ew, said another girl.
Excellent point, said Mr. Wheeler, pointing his hook at Serious Question Girl. Privacy concerns are a major point of the debate surrounding the proposal, and one of the ways it would absolutely affect the student experience for those with and without the marks.
Worth it, said Hands to Yourself Boy. I'll strip down right here if it means not having to wonder about anyone else anymore.
We know, said Front Row Girl.
Seriouser question, said a boy near the window. Why do they even need independent study? It's not like they're going to grow up to be anything.
That's true, Amber agreed. If it were me, I'd just run out the clock in front of the TV.
No, that's not what I mean, said Seriouser question boy. Raising the curse mark to 18 is the dumbest thing we could possibly be doing. Just think about all the money and resources that already go into giving these people these dread-filled little lives. They won't be around long enough to contribute. They'll never have kids. There's no point to them. We basically only keep them around to give them a chance to attack someone before they have to be put down. It's sick.
Well, that's certainly a position, said Mr. Wheeler.
Let's see if we can break it down to its premises, shall we? It's worse than that, said the girl behind Seriouser Question Boy. Curse marks are God's way of warning us about evil coming, so we can get it before it gets us. But because of some people, we're all literally being forced to go against his will.
Ah, said Mr. Wheeler. That argument is what's called an appeal to religion. Let's keep track of how much of this discussion comes down to that.
He started a set of hash marks on the board.
Wrong. What's there to discuss, boy said to God's will, girl. Curse marks are God's way of testing the parents. The marked kids aren't ours to destroy. We'd be stealing the parents' chance to prove their love is deep enough to put their children out of their misery.
Mr. Wheeler added another hash mark, promising again that we'd circle back to a point he was building to. As far as I remember, we never did.
Okay, so obviously there are a lot of ideas on what to do with the curse marked, said Amber with a faint professional smirk,
comfortably superior to God's will, girl, and what's there to discuss, boy. But can we all agree that they shouldn't be here? No, said front row girl. By majority rule, can we agree? Amber adjusted. That was the question, wasn't it? If the vote took place in this room, would we decide that the proposal is a step in the right direction or not? Have you actually read the proposal? Asked front row girl. Because it also forbids public schools from acknowledging that curse marks exist. Mr. Wheeler nodded in solemn confirmation. So this whole adult conversation you were so excited to have, said front row girl, you could kiss that goodbye. Yeah, I did read it, actually, said Amber. And the whole point is for us to be able to go to school without having to worry about the marks. Dwelling on them kind of defeats the purpose. I'm sure we'll have plenty of other relevant things to have adult conversations about once they're out of our hair.
Hair would be a good place to hide one, said Hans to yourself, boy, reaching behind him to run a searching hand through Amber's. She swatted him away.
You're just content with that idea, asked front row girl. Out of sight, out of mind. Okay, I think we know what your vote is, said Amber. Everybody else? All in favor of the proposal?
Mr. Wheeler opened his mouth as if he were going to overrule her, but couldn't seem to form words in time. I kept my eyes on front row girl's back and didn't watch how many people raised their hands.
All opposed? Prompted Amber.
I rested on my arms, still watching front row girl, only front row girl, as she reached into the air, like a hazy mirage on the horizon.
Brittany, Mr. Wheeler called me out again.
Sorry, I lifted my fallen head.
We're not boring you with all this talk about real events that impact real people's lives, are we?
No, I said, feeling my head start to droop again and fighting it. I'm just really tired. The tiredness didn't go away for the rest of the day. Not when the class ended, or even when I got home. Mom made macaroni and cheese that night, and she and Dad and I ate while watching TV dramas together on the couch. It was my favorite part of the day, my favorite food, and, in this case, my favorite show. It involved a fast-talking, fun-loving mother-daughter team who traveled the country solving crimes. I was really trying to pay attention, but the dialogue seemed to vanish without a trace as soon as it touched my brain, like drawing on the surface of water with a stick. It should have been a relief, being with people who hadn't been in that classroom, hadn't seen how much I'd wanted to disappear during the vote, weren't wondering about what that meant. But I couldn't help wondering, what if they had been there? I placed them in that room in my mind, tried to hear their voices in the conversation, but I couldn't. There simply weren't any relevant past conversations with them that I could extrapolate from. I leaned my head on my mom's shoulder and she patted my hair. This didn't help break the different sort of bubble I could feel around me. Invisible and flexible, but numbingly impermeable.
So, I announced my intention to say something, about half a second before I became aware of it myself. My stomach flipped over at least twice while waiting for my parents to respond, before I realized that they hadn't heard me over a sudden rise in volume. The mother and daughter on screen were yelling at each other. I couldn't remember the context for exactly why, but it had something to do with how they were too different to have ever become friends if they weren't family.
Tell me one thing you like about me, the daughter challenged. The mom took a comically long time to answer.
Well, you have very clear skin, she said at last. And in the end, isn't that what every mother hopes for?
My parents both burst into uproarious laughter. With a mischievous glance at each other, they pressed their hands over their mouths, but couldn't stop until several lines farther into the episode. The exhaustion that hadn't quite left me returned in full force. Once, I would have laughed at that joke too, no problem, thinking it was just a silly non sequitur. But it wasn't. Knowing what I knew now, about how much everyone in the world seemed to have to say about curse marks, I couldn't believe that someone had chosen that specific thing for the mom to comment on by coincidence. And even if that were possible, other jokes from other episodes and other shows were beginning to resurface in my mind. An unstoppable cascade of them. They clicked into place to form one long-running gag, threaded through all the imaginary worlds where I'd once thought curse marks had no bearing at all.
I don't get it, I lied tentatively, part of me still hoping that my parents were just the two most sincerely ignorant people I'd ever met. Why is that funny? Dad wiped his eyes and shook his head. I'll tell you when you're older. I didn't try to bring it up again. My 18th birthday fell on the day after my senior winter formal. I bought a dress. I made plans to go as part of a group with Amber and some other friends. Front Row Girl, who I'd kept thinking of as Front Row Girl long after I'd learned her name was Gabby, was going to be riding with us too, because her brother happened to be Amber's date. I wasn't particularly close with my parents by that point. I found myself becoming more distant with them, partly to adhere to the rules of undetectability, but also because I didn't love listening to them complain about my apathy toward college applications or my general lack of ambition. For the day of the dance, we managed to put it aside. They took me out to lunch as an early birthday celebration, and afterward, Mom helped me straighten my hair. When my friends came to pick me up, Dad invited them in for a flurry of handshakes and photos. It was pretty funny watching him shuffle us around in front of the camera, trying to guess whether there were any pairs within the group other than Amber and her guy. I considered telling Mom and Dad that I loved them on the way out the door, but I didn't want to raise any suspicion, so I settled for a quick exchange of hugs and smiles. They both looked really happy to see me taking an interest in something. And the strange thing is, the interest was real. It wasn't just a measured part of the role I was playing. When I'd found out about the date of the dance, I'd thought I might be too sad or scared to want to go when the time came. And I was sad, sitting in the back of Amber's mom's minivan, listening to the others talk about graduation and Christmas and movies that didn't come out until next week. But I also felt the way I felt on the night before a test that I'd actually studied for on time. There wasn't much left to do now, and tomorrow it would be over. When we arrived, I felt more awake than I had in years. I could see each individual metallic confetti star on the arch constructed just inside the gym entrance, and feel the beat and harmony of the music in my ribs, my fingers, my teeth. I made a beeline for the floor and danced. Not a grudging side-to-side shuffle, but a full-bodied flail that completely betrayed my affection for even the cheesiest of songs that had formed the background soundtrack of my life. People would be talking about me tomorrow either way. Amber laughed at first and asked what the hell I was doing, but when she got bored with trying to cajole her date onto the floor, she joined in. He eventually took the hint, accepted the proof that he wouldn't be the least graceful person there, and came to cut in. With the two of them slow dancing to fast music beside me, I found myself locking eyes with Gabby, who'd ventured out without a partner as well. We danced, both together and not together. Never touching, never stepping within arm's reach, but undeniably in sync, with each other even more than with the music itself. I savored every step, wondering if everyone experienced such a clear understanding that their life had reached its single highest point. I doubted many people got to save it for last. When the song was over, I excused myself, walked out to the football field, climbed to the top of the bleachers, and jumped off. I didn't die. It looked like a long enough fall from the top, and I tried for a swan dive onto the nearest concrete path, but I fell short. Instinct took over at the last moment, and I landed on my elbows and knees in the packed dirt. I couldn't count all the pops and snaps that happened on impact. They were too simultaneous, too overwhelming. For several seconds, maybe minutes, I lay there, hoping this would turn out to be a slightly longer, less elegant version of what I'd intended. I tried to feel myself slipping away, but I didn't slip. I remained rooted to the heavy, blurry blossoms of pain overlapping across my bones. The next uncertain stretch of time I spent trying to get up, or even crawl in search of a backup option. I couldn't do that either. No matter how hard I forced myself, not one of my limbs could push or pull the weight of my torso. The next stretch I spent screaming. I screamed in pain and frustration. I screamed for help. I even screamed my confession. I'm marked! In the hope that someone would come help me finish it before the change came. After that, I must have blacked out. I woke up for a few moments on a stretcher behind an ambulance while the paramedics were cutting through my dress. One of them saw the mark with the scar at the top. He froze for only a second, processing its presence, without looking particularly surprised. He glanced up at my face, and with a look of pure pity, covered the mark with a bandage. It was one of the only places where I didn't think I needed one. Consciousness brushed against me a few more times, and each time it did, I tried to call out, to warn someone, to turn my head and search for a clock. I couldn't command my body, not even the tiny, undamaged parts like my eyelids, and I wondered if this was how it started. If I would spend the rest of my existence trapped in this dream prison, watching flashes of myself committing atrocities and wondering which were real and which imagined. But eventually, the consciousness stopped teasing and slammed into place. I was still in the same hospital room I'd seen glimpses of, and according to the date displayed on the muted news program on the TV, I'd been here for 2 days. 2 days. With a lot of aching and even more anesthetic dizziness, I was able to sit up in bed. What little movement my limbs were capable of felt perfectly within my control. No one else's. And I still felt no urge whatsoever for random depraved violence. When a nurse making his rounds found me awake, I briefly considered telling him anyway. But what immediate danger could I pose, really, in my current condition? That sense of precious privacy returned. "I miss my birthday," I said. "Yeah, sorry, kiddo," he said. "I'll give your parents a call." I spent another week in the hospital, long enough that there wasn't any point in my going back to school until after winter break. Gabby had been the one to find me, it turned out, nearly an hour after I'd left the gym. No one had heard any of what I'd been shouting. I told my parents that I couldn't remember anything between dancing with my friends and waking up in bed. "No, of course I hadn't wanted to hurt myself," I insisted. "Why would I? Just ask anyone how much fun I was having. Just look at everything I'd lost out on because of this." There was a brief investigation, trying to figure out if I'd been drugged or attacked, but since my tox screen was negative and all my injuries could be explained by the fall, the whole thing was eventually written off as the sort of bizarre accident that would probably never receive a satisfactory explanation. Apparently, there are a lot of those. Day after day, I observed myself, wondering if the curse was slower acting than I'd been led to believe, or if maybe the mark was waiting for me to get stronger again before making its move. I watched for the slightest sign, ready to go back to the plan if it felt like I might hurt someone, but nothing happened. Absolutely nothing. When school started up again, I skipped past the crowd of reuniting shrieks and hugs, where Amber was probably waiting for me, surrounded by enough people to not really need me to show up. I stopped for only a moment at my locker to drop off my things and collect a few birthday cards that had been taped to it, and then steered my rented power wheelchair directly to Mr. Wheeler's office. I'm not sure why it seemed so much easier to ask him than my parents. Maybe because after graduation, I'd never have to see him again. Jeez, when had I started thinking phrases like, after graduation? Probably around the same time that whole "my door is always open" spiel actually started to work on me. Who knew? "Brittany," Mr. Wheeler greeted me, sounding even more surprised than I was. "Welcome back. I was so sorry to hear about what happened. I believe they're working on redesigning those bleachers. Is there anything you need while you're on the mend?" "Yeah," I said. "I need some adult advice."
Oh, of course."
He sat up a little straighter behind his desk, and for a moment I was reminded of Amber's imitation of an adult. The similarity didn't instill me with much confidence, but I supposed adults, full-blown adults, must have come up with that gesture first to give the rest of us something to imitate in the first place.
"Well," he started with a heavy exhale, "I can't say I know exactly what you're going through, but I did go through this when I was a bit younger than you." He held up his prosthetic hand. "So I can tell you—"
"Not about surviving an accident," I stopped him. I took a breath. I looked down at my knees. I went through with it. "I'm curse marked," I said. "I'm curse marked, and now I'm a curse marked adult, technically. I didn't mean to be, but it happened. And I don't feel any different. Am I missing—" "Close the door," Mr. Wheeler said suddenly. I reached for it with my good arm, the one that had only taken a hairline fracture and a dislocation.
Never mind, I'll get it. Mr. Wheeler stopped me.
He stood up, looked both ways down the corridor, shut the door, and returned to his desk.
The mark. Was it why you...
He nodded at my casts and the chair. I hesitated at the risk of putting myself on a self-harm watch list, but decided to go all in. I nodded. Mr. Wheeler nodded back in understanding.
You want my advice, he said very seriously. I nodded again.
Heal up, he said.
Start applying to colleges. Don't tell anyone else. Just keep doing what you've been doing and try to get on with your life.
What life? I sputtered. What I've been doing is expecting it to end before it really starts.
Well, it didn't, Mr. Wheeler said bluntly.
That's it, I said. Just keep hiding. What if I start dating someone? What if I get married?
Either don't or keep the lights off, said Mr. Wheeler. It took me several seconds to accept that he'd really said that. This was the precious adult advice I'd stuck my neck out to hear.
But what about everyone else? I asked. I'm not just going to walk around like this when I'm better if it means I'm a danger to others.
Mr. Wheeler chewed on his bottom lip, visibly not saying something.
Am I a danger to others, Mr. Wheeler? I asked.
Very deliberately, Mr. Wheeler raised a finger to rub his eye. Instead of moving the finger, he shook his whole head from side to side to rub the eyelid against it.
Excuse me, was that supposed to be a no? I asked.
I didn't say anything, said Mr. Wheeler. I think you should get ready for class now.
No, 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 wait. Are you telling me the marks mean nothing?
Mr. Wheeler took a breath.
They mean a great deal to a lot of people.
But they don't mean that I'm doomed to become a rampaging monster.
I was having trouble catching my breath.
Is there any truth to the...
Truth is subjective, Mr. Wheeler recited at me.
Are there studies? I asked. Statistics? Higher rates of violent crime in people with the marks? Anything like that?
Mr. Wheeler rubbed his eye again.
I sat there speechless for a moment, laughing at the sight of myself, playing these childish faux spy games with my self-appointed trusted adult.
Do you realize, I sighed, looking down at the chair, that you could have saved me with one sentence?
I couldn't, Mr. Wheeler said tightly. When we talked about the marks in class, I would have believed you. If you told us
truth, he interrupted,
is subjective, right? I finished for him.
You're so full of shit.
He didn't try to censor me, which probably meant he'd be in more trouble than I would if this conversation were reported in full, even with how careful he'd been.
What do you want from me? He asked softly.
You want to take my job? You want money? Revenge?
I want you to say that there's nothing wrong with me, I shouted, startling myself with how much I still did want that from this sad, helpless-looking man. I want you to tell me it's okay for me to exist.
I can't say that to you,
Mr. Wheeler pleaded through a strangled, tight throat.
It's controversial. I'm only allowed to poke at controversy. I can't take a side.
I startled myself even more with the brief, stinging wave of tears that leaked out in response to his answer. I wiped the tears away and nodded as the sting faded into an old, familiar numbness.
Okay, I said. And I guess I'll have to be the one to say it to someone else.
Brittany, wait, he said as I started to turn my chair. Don't make any rash decisions.
How many more people do you think are hiding marks in this school alone? I asked. What do you think it would mean to them to see a perfectly normal 18-year-old who has one?
It won't work, he said.
I maneuvered back toward his desk.
Why not?
He drummed the fingers of his good hand on the desk, collecting his thoughts.
The people you live among, he said. The people we live among have devoted their whole lives to saving the world from the curse.
I felt a faint warmth in my stomach as I heard him insert the quotation marks around that word, but it was short-lived. "There's nothing they won't do, do you understand?" he went on. "That's how deeply they believe in their mission. They fight it in themselves, in other people. Some of them have killed their own children trying to stop it. They calculate every choice they make according to whatever they think will reduce their chances of manifesting a mark, or get rid of one." Mr. Wheeler rested his good hand unconsciously on his prosthetic one. "For a lot of people, being unmarked is their life's greatest and only accomplishment," he said. "Their identities are completely dependent on the idea that what they're doing is right, and your existence is a threat to that idea." My patience was wearing thin. "Are you about to explain to me how it's my duty to respect that their beliefs are more important than my life?" "I'm trying to explain why they won't accept you," said Mr. Wheeler. "If you tell them that their life's work, all of the vicious things they've done, was all for nothing, you don't know the lengths the human mind will go to protect itself from that kind of shame. Once they know what you are, one way or another, your life as you know it will be over." I didn't do anything rash. I counted all the way to 10 while I considered his words, before grabbing the scissors from the cup on his desk and cutting through the side of my jeans. "Been there," I said. "Accepted that."
"I..."
Mr. Wheeler faltered as he watched me cut a roughly circular hole through my jeans and the underwear beneath, exposing only the relevant patch of skin.
"I'm going to have to dress code you."
"Oh, please," I said, using his stapler to attach one of my birthday cards, one with a big number 18 on it, to the fabric just below the mark. "Like you're what I'm scared of right now." He said something else when I wrestled the door back open and steered out into the crowded corridor. It might have been good luck.
Cursemark was written and performed by Fiona J.R. Tichenel. Narration was provided by Matt Carter. This episode was edited by Fiona J.R. Tichenel and Matt Carter. The Shadow Storyteller's theme, written and performed by Dennis Tichenel. The Shadow Storyteller's artwork by Kristen McQuiggan of Drop Dead Designs. Special thanks to Lisa Onzo and Greg Bowles for the use of their guest room in this recording. For more information on the Shadow Storyteller's podcast and our other fiction works, please visit our website at theshadowstorytellers.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please like and subscribe for more information on upcoming episodes. We hope you had fun, and we'll see you again soon.